there have been just too many rejections that we have faced. But I think the journey of an entrepreneur just starts with a rejection. I don't think an entrepreneur would have ever gotten acceptance the first go. And then more rejections that you kind of face, and if you're able to constantly just keep driving towards the values that drove you in the first place, I think that that is where, you know, the secret is.
Tell the listeners about your second wife.
So, you know, I'm surprised you remember that. In fact, you know, if I may, after the last podcast was aired, my wife was very, very angry with me, saying, "How can you say that?" And so I would, you know, so I no longer refer to as to my bike. So my second wife, you know, for everyone who's listening, is my bike. Her name is Leticia, but I don't refer to her as a second wife anymore.
You mentioned pivoting. What was that hard to do initially?
It was very hard because I think when we started off, we had established ourselves as a road trip planner. So all the Google search and everything, you know, pointed to the fact that we are a road trip planner, and suddenly we're not, and we are a journey planner. So now you entered a very crowded market.
Hello everyone, Neil Patelia. Thank you for downloading the latest episode of the Indian Startup Show. So this is an exciting new feature. It's called Where Are They Now? I catch up with previous guests who came on the show. Today I catch up with Vineet Rajan. He's the co-founder of Scout My Trip, India's first subscription-based travel planner powered by local travel experts. He gives us an update on what's been happening since I last spoke to him over 2 years ago, including being recognized as one of the top 50 startups to watch in India. He also talks about expanding into Southeast Asia. He explains why they pivoted and now use virtual scouts, talks about raising 500k, talks about content marketing strategies, talks about hot new destinations in India you should visit, talks about a life-changing trip to Ladakh, and finally talks about eating ghost chilies in Northeast India and his second wife, Leticia. So please enjoy the show. Thank you. Hello, Vineet.
Hello.
Thank you for coming back on the Indian Startup Show again.
It's an absolute pleasure to be back, Neil. Okay. Really good to be talking to you again.
Yeah, so I last spoke to you April 2018.
Yes, it's going to be a two-year anniversary since we were hosted on the Indian Startup Show.
Cool. Yeah, since I last spoke to you, you know, how things are going?
Things have been just on the upswing. In fact, from April 2018 till now, if I were to just talk about our journey in terms of business, right now we are, so from the last time we spoke, our business right now would be close to around 5 times as to what we were doing back then. So that's been a phenomenal growth for us in terms of just the market validation, in terms of what we're doing. And I think a lot of it also has to do with certain decisions we have taken with respect to how we position ourselves and how we kind of go to the market. In fact, one major change, Neil, is when we spoke in April 2018, we were very bullish about being a road trip planner. Mm-hmm. We were saying that we help people plan road trips, but we learned it, you know, the hard way. I would use the word the hard way because we didn't kind of understand the consumer perceptions very clearly. And that was a big learning because I think road trips are very closely associated with spontaneity. You don't want to plan road trips. You just want to go on a road trip. And we were trying to say we were building a road trip planner. So there was a very big disconnect there. And while there were a set of people who really liked what we do, there was a bigger segment of people which did not connect with what we were doing. So which is why we kind of dropped the entire thing of being a road trip planner and we started saying we help you plan journeys. Mm. And you can either do it yourself or you hire a virtual guide who does it for you. And that person is called a scout. Mm-hmm. So there has been a big shift in how we're actually perceived in the market, how we're positioning ourselves, and the service we offer to your fivefold increase in our revenue.
Excellent. That's great news. How does the virtual scout work then? Because I was in India last month. I went from Mumbai to my parents' place. Live in Gujarat near Surat, I think it was. I had no idea how to get a train ticket. It took me about 2 hours to find out the foreign counter, which is counter number 4 for any of our listeners who want to come to India and get a train. And then I had to fill in a form, give my passport over, et cetera, et cetera. Took me about 2.5 hours. How would you help me then?
Yeah. So a virtual guide or a scout is a person you can hire through Scout My Trip. Mm. And it is very, very cost effective. Like if I were to talk about it in dollar terms or say euros, you would have spent around 20 euros to get a virtual guide at the beck and call of your this thing in terms of what you want to do. Just 20 euros, that's it. And he would have been there to really plan out saying this. So for you to go to Surat, why don't you go by this medium? It could have been a train. He might have even suggested a bus. He or she might have even suggested a vehicle, a taxi, or a self-drive car if he had asked you about your license or things like that. So scouts essentially have a very meaningful conversation with the traveler, really understand how you're traveling. So had you been traveling with a family or with elders or with kids, the scout may have recommended something different altogether. So it's not just about how you reach a particular place. The scout would have also guided you. Had you been, you know, going by, say, bus, he would have recommended the suitable time for you to have traveled so that you can optimize the number of days in with your parents in Surat. So those are things that scouts do. And of course, you're just visiting family. So I'm guessing you won't have done too much of sightseeing around. But had you gone to Surat for, say, a vacation, the scout would have also asked you about the kind of things you like to do. Do you like to, you know, go to the beach, or do you want to see heritage, or what kind of food do you like? Are you vegetarians? Are you non-vegetarians? And they would have, the scouts would have curated an entire itinerary for you hour by hour, saying this is what you can do in Surat to have a great time. And this is how you come back. Or this is how from Surat you can go to another place. Saying, would you want to go to a hill station? Why don't you go to catch a glimpse of the Statue of Unity, which is, say, just 150 kilometers from Surat? And these are the ways you can go. And these are the different stay options you'll have nearby. So the scouts really help you make sense of how you should be traveling and how you optimize your time. The big research, you know, that we did when we were pivoting from being a road trip planner to a journey planner was, in India alone, Indians spent close to 1 billion hours in this kind of planning. And that is because there is a huge asymmetry in information. There is either too much information or very little information. So you end up, you know, touching upon 17 different touch points. And these could be Google, these could be TripAdvisor, blogs, talking to people, so on and so forth. And you bring that touch point to just one, who is the scout or your virtual guide. So that is a big, big shift. And instead of spending that 1 billion hours that Indians have spent on planning leisure trips, all this is done by scouts or virtual guides who are making money by helping travelers like you. This essentially creates employment on a big scale. And these scouts are virtual, so they never travel with you. So they never meet you. So one scout could be helping 10 customers. And right now you're just scratching the surface, because one scout on an average is helping 2 to 3 customers on a monthly basis. That itself, they're able to earn between 40 to 60 euros or close to around $100 they're earning right now by just helping 2 to 3 customers. If we were to kind of increase this on a global level, and given more business to scouts, then we're essentially looking at creating employment on a huge mass level. And this was the one thing that the government of India recognized. And last year in November 2019, we were conferred the National Entrepreneurship Award by the Ministry of Skill Development and Entrepreneurship, saying you are creating employment at the grassroots with your innovation in the travel and tourism industry. Big honor for us. And we ourselves, you know, we couldn't believe it. We had to literally pinch ourselves silly to, you know, come to terms that we're actually winning this. It's a great moment for us.
So let's say I wanted to book that bus or train. Do I book it through the virtual scout then?
No, the scout is your consultant.
Yeah,
the
okay.
scout is not a travel agent. So that is the big difference. So travel agents usually, you know, kind of end up pushing things that give them higher margins.
Yeah, true.
Or more business. So a scout was your consultant whom you can, an unbiased consultant whom you can trust. So if the scout felt that, you know, you would be better off by going in a car, he would have actually recommended that. He or she would have recommended that. So that's how scouts work. They're unbiased and they're not travel agents. They'll recommend you things you can do, and you have the option to do all this on your own, or you can just, on the same mobile app, you have the option to ping the Scout My Trip concierge, and the concierge does all your bookings.
That's nice. Good. You mentioned pivoting. What was that hard to do initially?
It was very hard, because I think when we started off, we had established ourselves as a road trip planner. So all the Google search and everything, you know, pointed to the fact that we are a road trip planner, and suddenly we're not, and we are a journey planner. So now you entered a very crowded market, you know, which had the incumbent players like, and the big names, you know, Make My Trip, all these guys are basically journey planners. They help you go for vacations. They sell packages. They sell tours. So we entered a very crowded market. So differentiation was very, very important for us. And thankfully, with all the content marketing we did, we were able to establish that we are not a travel agent. We are a platform where you can kind of plan on your own. And you don't have to spend money on planning on your own, or you hire a virtual guide. So, but that took us some time. There are some things that worked for us, Neil. I think in our journey in that pivot, one very crucial piece was that I started podcasting. So I wanted to reach out to customers. I wanted to reach out to people who are following us and tell them in my words as to what we were doing and how we were different. So the podcast essentially kind of helped us bridge that gap between the customer perception and what we are really doing. That had a very good side effect as well. We started reaching out to more and more people, and that allowed us to build a very loyal customer base. In fact, 70% of our customers are repeat customers. So and I'm talking over a horizon of 2 years since the time we pivoted. So that is a very high number for somebody in our business because it's hugely competitive.
Yeah.
And that is that just goes to show that, you know, we have been able to connect with the consumers and where others might have not been able to.
So actually go back to the business model then. You're now a subscription-based business model.
Yeah.
It's an hour. How are you finding that side of things then?
So what essentially, we did this as a subscription was, we wanted to, again, this is going to go through some amount of, you know, tweaking and fine-tuning. And that is, I think, part and parcel of being a startup. It gives you that agility to quickly evolve. We realized that travel is very seasonal. And, there are certain months, like in India, you would travel a lot during, say, November to around February. You'll travel a lot during the months of May and June when summer vacations are going on. And then there are months like monsoons when people hardly travel. They're only going for weekend trips. So we were trying to see how we can ensure that we are able to take the seasonality out of the travel business, which is where, you know, we had this idea saying, can we make this a subscription model like how Netflix works? So you get a monthly this thing for Netflix and you get certain services from them. Can we make our entire website a subscription-based service wherein you pay an X amount of money and you get access to virtual experts for a specific number of days and for a specific number of trips? That really helped us last year when there was a big dip in travel because of excessive monsoons and excessive summers. Because what we realized was a lot of people started utilizing their subscription days for weekend getaways, which we had not seen the year before. So weekend getaways also became a very addressable market for us by the subscription model. And people are just sitting at home wondering what to do, and the weather is bad, they don't want to do something very, very extensive. They were able to, you know, get recommendations, ideas, very well-made itineraries by virtual guides for places just around them. So that worked really in our favor. And that is one thing that, you know, kind of really boosted our revenues last year, even though it was very bad for travel.
Last time I spoke to you, I think you were bootstrapping this. Is that still the case?
So last time we spoke, we had raised one round of funding from our accelerator called Z-Nation Lab. That was in April 2017. Right now, we are in talks to raise around $500,000 USD. And we are in the process of closing this in the next 1 or 2 months. So that entire investment that we're raising right now is going to go towards heavy deployment into technology. So AI is one part of our business which we have not really invested in. And that is one thing that we'll heavily start putting resources and money into. Because all the conversations that customers are having with virtual guides, all the plans that guides are making on our platform, there is just so much information that we can make available to others who are doing this very same thing. So the intelligence that, you know, we have always kind of hoped to achieve is something that we'll heavily invest in with this fundraise that we're doing in the coming months. The second part of where the investment is also going to go towards is expanding into Southeast Asia. So last year, we were invited to Indonesia by accelerator called Digitaraya. They're also supported by the Google developer Launchpad, and we've spent a week in Indonesia just understanding the Southeast Asian market when it came to travel. And we realized that the similarities, the cultural similarities, the consumer mindset is so similar to an Indian consumer that it makes very logical sense for us to expand into Indonesia and then look at Southeast Asia mm-hmm. as an entire market. So there's going to be a level of deployment we're also going to do towards setting up an office in Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. It could be Indonesia for most likely it'll be Indonesia. And that, you know, is going to not just help Indians who go to Southeast Asia. We're also looking at inbound travelers to Indonesia, to Southeast Asia from other countries, where, you know, virtual guides can play a very big role. In fact, we can also look at increasing the ticket size. So instead of, you know, paying 20 euros around $30 for hiring a virtual guide for 5 days, we could be also looking at increase the ticket value, because traveling to these countries, there will be higher level of involvement. There's going to be, so we'll also have to build in language translators within our mobile app, because scouts could be speaking just the local language, mm-hmm. but the travelers could be more comfortable in English.
Mm-hmm. How did you find doing business in Indonesia then compared to India?
So I think, Indonesia was an eye-opener for us. Mm-hmm. The number of unicorns in Indonesia can match India. And, in terms of population, in terms of the cultural similarities, in terms of how family values, in terms of food, the similarities are so many. And as a country, they love to travel. It's a growing economy. I think there is a huge push in Indonesia towards growing tourism. In fact, they want to, kind of build 15 new islands as Bali.
Wow.
As Bali. Bali is the most popular, tourist destination in Indonesia. So they want to create 15 more such islands which are equal or better than Bali.
That's very ambitious.
So that's very ambitious, and they're actually on track to do it. So It's amazing, as you know, Indonesia as a country gets 2 times more foreign visitors than India.
Really?
Yes. So that's the level of focus they have on tourism. And Southeast Asia on the whole, if you look at Thailand or Malaysia or Singapore, these countries are heavily dependent on tourist income. In fact, if you look at even the contribution to GDP in Indonesia, it's close to around 10% of the contribution comes from tourism. That's a very big percentage to the national GDP.
Oh, interesting. Interesting stuff. It seems that Indonesia is growing quickly.
Yes.
What does India need to do then in terms of attracting foreign tourists then?
I think that is where, I personally feel Scout My Trip can play a very big role. Mm. What happens typically, with foreigners coming to India is they end up usually getting caught in tourist traps. And they also end up going to the same places over and over again. And there is a lot to explore in India, which is not happening. In fact, in 2019, on Independence Day, our Prime Minister made a statement saying that, can we as a country promote 15 tourist destinations that we would like to visit personally by 2022? Mm-hmm. Now, if we have to create awareness for these 15 new places which are not heard of, which are unknown, there has to be a general movement towards promoting these places. And that is where we feel that, virtual guides or scouts can play a very big role in taking the word across mm-hmm. to people who are talking to them, the customers who are interacting with them. And if inbound travelers coming to India are able to, leverage that scout and go do something more different, something more unique, I think that is where the true values of India will come across mm-hmm. to the world. And that is what we need to do. Because mm-hmm. I think the world has seen enough of pictures from Goa or, Taj Mahal and Jaipur. And we need to move beyond that.
I was going to show you my pictures of Goa from last December.
Where had you been to?
I went to the standard places, Kalangut, Baga Beach.
Lovely.
But it's a nice place. But yeah, but you mentioned the 22 places. What would be one of those places then?
Before 2022. So 15 places before 22, I think top of the list would definitely be Northeast. Mm-hmm. So Northeast of India is very raw. I think tourism there is very rustic. It is more on rural tourism. In fact, you don't have too many hotels or resorts. There are more homestays. And it's less developed compared to other parts of the country in terms of, even infrastructure. But over the last couple of years, there's been a big push towards pushing tourism. In fact, a lot of festivals get hosted in Northeast. The biggest one being NH7 Weekender, which is a music festival, which is hosted in Shillong, which is the capital city of Meghalaya. And this has been a major draw for getting travelers and tourists from not just India, but all over the world. In fact, there's one more which happens in Arunachal called the Zero Fest. So there is a big movement in terms of creating these big festivals, you know, which can bring people and experience the way of life there. Because Northeast, everything is different compared to India, from food, from the way their food is just one, the music they listen to, the languages they speak. The cultural diversity in the Seven Sisters of Northeast can compare to the entire country. It is such a beautiful place. And you know, a lot of people say that a lifetime is not sufficient to explore Northeast. So there is a big movement towards Northeast, and that will be top of the list for one of the 15 places before 2022. I think some other places that will really see a big movement in this coming few years would be Himachal. I think Ladakh, there are too many people who have seen there, gone there. Himachal, you know, also has a place called Spiti, which is very similar in geography, you know, when you look at Ladakh. Ladakh is typically, you know, you would refer to it as the highest desert in the world. You know, it's altitude of 4,500 meters on average, and it's all desert. Spiti is somewhat similar to that, but it's lesser known. So I think that would be number two in terms of the top 15 places before 2022. Sure. And then, of course, you know, you have places in central India, south India, which are less known. I mean, there are just too many for me to kind of name. I'd be happy if you want me to, but it's a long list.
I have to explore it myself, definitely next year. You mentioned, yes. you mentioned the food. How's the food different in Northeast India then?
So, you know, just an example, if I were to share, you know, Northeast, they have a specific type of chili. It's also called the ghost chili.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of this, yeah.
Yes, so it's used in regular cooking. And if you have one of those chilies, just like that, you are in for a very, very tough time. But that is something that they have just about daily. Now, that is, you know, an example of how different the food is. In fact, even they eat a lot of meat. So I think pork is something, you know, which is kind of a staple meat for, you know, people in Northeast. There's a lot of vegetables and leaves they kind of consume. As part of a daily diet. So there are, in fact, even the style of cooking is very different. The kind of, they use a lot of pork fat in cooking compared to oil. So there are these, you know, very major differences when it comes to how they cook and what they eat. It's definitely beyond, you know, people have the perception that Northeast is all about dim sums and, you know, wontons. It's absolutely not. There's so much there to explore and kind of, you know, enjoy.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds interesting. Sounds exciting. Definitely book it for next year.
yes.
Yeah, you mentioned the fundraising, $500,000 USD. Talk about that journey then, in terms of, like, I mean, you must have met a lot of investors, must have had a lot of feedback, etc. There's a lot of knockbacks. Yeah. How was that journey experience?
You know, there's no rosy way to kind of paint this picture. It's been hard. And we have been trying for a while to kind of raise investment. Travel as a space is extremely competitive. And, you know, there has been a general, you know, a lot of investors have not looked at it very favorably. Because, and there are various factors. There are factors with respect to existing players, which have really big, heavily funded. And there are factors such as, you know, there haven't been too many exits in the travel industry. So there are a lot of factors which have not worked for travel on the whole. So, you know, our journey in this fundraise is still ongoing. I don't think you can ever say that, you know, you have raised investment till that money hits your bank account. That's an old saying. And I would still say the journey is on. But we are close. We are very close in terms of, you know, getting something in writing and actually see it happening. But if I were to kind of just see how many, there have been just too many rejections that we have faced. But I think the journey of an entrepreneur just starts with a rejection. I don't think an entrepreneur would have ever gotten acceptance the first go. And then more rejections that you kind of face, and if you're able to constantly just keep driving towards the values that drove you in the first place, I think that that is where, you know, the secret is for any entrepreneur. It's tough to raise funds, you know, in a market like this. The number of rejections, you know, sometimes you just need to believe that what you're doing is right and your business fundamentals are right, and you will, end of the day, see light at the end of the tunnel. That belief, you know, we lost that belief. A belief was completely shattered a few times, but we came back. We came back from there and we were just focusing on growing our business the way we were doing, improving our operations, improving our processes, working hard on our marketing. So, you know, all this entire journey of fundraise is also a way for you to introspect and do things differently, try out something else, something new. So, you know, that's how I look at it, in a very positive way. Mm. Every rejection has been, you know, positive step towards getting that that fundraise for us.
Mm. Yeah, you've had a great 2019, just looking at the awards. Selected by Entrepreneur Magazine as one of the top 50 startups to look out for. Scout Matrix recognized by Startup India in February 2019, incubated by NASCOM's 10,000 Startups, winner Conquest 2019 Startup Challenge by Bits Pilani, selected as part of the Travel and Tourism Court by Jitara Indonesia, we talked about. Income tax exemption granted under Startup India program. What's all that about?
That is something that, you know, that's a great step by the government of India to support startups with more money, very indirectly. So instead of, you know, investing in your venture, what they say is that you keep the profits, don't pay the taxes.
Okay.
So you get complete exemption from paying any kind of income tax. So income tax in India is at around 25%, and startups who get this exemption don't pay any income tax. So the entire 25% which we would have paid as tax goes back into the business, which is as good as an investment. That is a great initiative by the government of India, and not too many startups have got this exemption as yet, but the ones who have got it, it has directly impacted their growth. I mean, you know, there's one way of looking at it is saying you show higher profit in the books, but the other way of looking at it is you reinvest the money, which is only going towards creating more jobs, which is only going into helping the entire ecosystem, because you're paying that money to some vendor to grow.
Let's talk about your trips then. Since we last spoke, have you done any travel, any highlights?
I think two trips really stand out. Last year, I'd been to Ladakh in June 2019, and it was a life-changing trip for me. I think every time I've gone to Ladakh, I've learned something new, and it has only made me, you know, more humble in terms of how I look at life. Because Ladakh is that one place which teaches you a lesson the very hard way. And this particular trip of Ladakh, there was one gentleman who was traveling with us, and he had he started facing AMS, which is acute mountain sickness.
Oh.
And that is tough. And by the time I took him to the hospital, I had to do an overnight drive of around 300 kilometers with him. And, you know, he was literally just out of breath. So it was one of those experiences, you know, which brings you back to reality, saying, you know, Ladakh is not for the faint-hearted. And the same trip, we were stuck in snow for 20 hours. We just were stuck in snow. That's it.
20 hours.
20 hours in snow. We didn't have food. We were melting ice and drinking that.
Wow.
It sounds like
a movie.
Yeah, it was something. So, you know, these experiences live with you for your entire life. And that is one reason why I really will never forget that trip. So that's one I did. And the second one was the end of last year, December 2019. I did a road trip with my wife Swati, and we covered Karnataka. And we have always dreamt of, you know, exploring Karnataka and doing it in a different way. So, you know, we did what usually our customers do. We hired a scout, and our scout made such a lovely plan for us. We went to some of those offbeat places which, you know, people wouldn't usually go to. We did, we stayed with locals, we stayed at homestays, we ate local food. And the 12 days on the road with my wife on that trip was again an experience for us. Mm. I think food was the one reason why we were just traveling. And our scout was recommending all the lovely places to eat.
Well, tell the listeners about your second wife.
So, you know, I'm surprised you remember that. In fact, you know, if I may, after the last podcast was aired, my wife was very, very angry with me, saying, "How can you say that?" And so I would, you know, so I no longer refer to as to my bike. So my second wife, you know, for everyone who's listening, is my bike. Her name is Leticia, but I don't refer to her as a second wife anymore. So it's a part of my life. It's a soulmate of mine, if I may. The bike.
How many miles have you done now in that bike?
I think from the last time we spoke till now on the bike, I would have done around, I wouldn't have done too much. You know, I think when we spoke, I would have done around 300 odd miles I would have done on the bike.
Mm.
I would have added close to around 30 to 40,000 miles on that.
Wow.
So I wouldn't have done too much also in the last 2 years because I think I was driving more and riding less.
Mm. Yeah, we never actually spoke about your co-founder on the last episode. So yeah, just talk about your co-founder. There's a great story of how you met as well.
Yeah. So my co-founder is Deepak, Deepak Anant. We met, you know, through biking.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the reasons why I was so passionate about road trips, saying if two blokes like us can come together riding Royal Enfields and start a company, any biker can do anything. I think we went out with that thought and made Scout My Trip. Deepak, you know, comes from a very different walk of life. I've always been the startup guy,
yeah.
But Deepak is an out and out corporate guy. So, you know, he'll look at processes.
Mm.
He'll work with big Excel sheets, with pivot tables. I still don't understand how pivot tables work.
That makes two of us.
And, you know, he's that guy who will think something 10 steps ahead. This comes from experience because 20 years you're in the corporate life. You've worked with some of the biggest corporates like the Tatas. So he worked for Tata Communication Services and he launched their white label ATM product called IndiCash. So he was that was a big launch for him in his career. And his last corporate role was with Verifone, where he was the director for Southeast Asia. So these are roles where he has handled hundreds of people under him, a lot of millions of dollars in terms of budgets. So that experience has been very crucial for Scout My Trip's way of working. So while we are a startup, we are very agile, we are very quick in terms of taking decisions. We still are able to kind of put some method in madness because of Deepak. And that's the experience he brings onto the table. So that has been a very unique mix, which a lot of people appreciate, including investors. Of course, we may not raise investment, we haven't raised for various other reasons, but the team has never been the reason why we have not raised investment so far. Because we bring the big mix of both worlds, which is a startup way of life and a corporate way of life.
Mm. Tell the story of how you guys met then. It was literally on the highway, right?
It was literally on the highway. So in fact, you know, one of the media publications also wrote about this. So I was on a bike trip on my way back to Bombay from, you know, a big South India tour I had done on Leticia, my bike. And I had a small breakdown at that point. And Mr. Deepak, who's the co-founder, came along. And he kind of helped me out, saying, you know, and he had some stuff with him. And we fixed our bike and we started moving along. And we stayed in touch after that. Had he not come there, I would have been stranded there for quite some time.
Mm.
Because there's no way I could have pushed my bike. It was pretty heavy. There's a lot of stuff loaded on a Royal Enfield when you're doing long trips.
Mm.
So, you know, he helped me out at a time when he didn't know me, I didn't know him. And, you know, both of us just really hit it off. And we stayed in touch. In fact, 2010-11, we even started a biking club in Bombay.
Mm.
We did a lot of charity work together. In fact, one of the things we did as a biking club was we used to go to old age homes. We used to go to orphanages, take the kids around on the bike, and they used to really like it.
Mm.
Spend Christmas or New Year's with the kids. So there's a lot of, in fact, we even did some rallies to raise awareness about road safety and wearing helmets. So there is a lot of passion projects that we worked on, which gave us a level of comfort working with each other.
Mm.
And that is when, you know, somewhere around 2014-15, we started toying with the idea of, should we make a road trip planner? Because, you know, both of us loved planning road trips.
Mm.
And, you know, we spoke to so many people and everybody said, yes, we need a road trip planner. But I think the survey that we did was heavily skewed towards people who liked road trip planning.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's a different story, which I mentioned. But 2016, finally, we started working on Scout My Trip and we formed a company and we finally launched the product in December 2016.
Mm. So it was total fate then, how you guys met?
It's total fate. I don't think I would have met him any other way. And without my my bike, Leticia, I might not have met Deepak at all.
Wow, amazing.
Things would have been very different. I would have probably not been doing this, maybe something else.
Yeah, what would life look like then if you two guys didn't meet?
If I had not met him, I might myself be in some kind of a corporate job right now. Although, you know, I was already working with my previous startup at that point of time, which was IndieBlogger. And I think I might have been doing something completely different, because I wouldn't have discovered travel as a passion, as an addictive passion. I might have, you know, discovered something else. It's very hard to say what I might have been doing had this not happened. But like Steve Jobs said, you know, you'll have to just hope at the end of the day the dots connect somewhere.
Last few questions then. On the last episode, on the last time I spoke to you, you were like into growth hacking and stuff like that. Obviously, you're like the marketing guy. Are you still doing the growth hacking strategies? What seems to be working now then, in terms of marketing?
So what is working right now is, interestingly, offline marketing for us right now. So what we've started doing is we have started partnering with some of the biggest companies to offer our service of hiring virtual guides to employees.
Okay.
So as a big company, could they do something differently for their employees to engage them, for them to have a better vacation somewhere?
Mm-hmm.
That is something that has really worked for us. And these are all offline. So, you know, we directly partner with big companies and trying to say that, hey, you know what? You can offer this to your employees, and your employees get a discount. There is no cost to you, but your employees just have a much better vacation than they would.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good for you because they'll come back refreshed and do much better work. So that has kind of really worked for us. In fact, a recent one that we've kind of done is with 91 Springboard, which has close to around 20,000 members all over India. And this is a co-working space in India, and they've rolled it across to all their members. So anyone, you know, in 91 Springboard gets immediate access to virtual guides, gets a nice little discount, and it's good for everybody. So that's one recent one we've done. The second thing that, you know, again, we've started really doing very aggressively is, like I mentioned, podcasting and content marketing. So the content marketing focus is really gone up because advertising on digital mediums is only getting more and more expensive. In fact, we haven't seen organic traffic coming from some of the social networks at all. So the more genuine stories that you build, the more genuine or authentic content that you are able to create is what is driving customers.
So would you not get into like business travel then? That seems to be quite a big market.
Yes. So you know, in fact, you call it outbound, company outbounds. That is something we have done. In fact, last year, one very successful outbound activity we did was for Honda. So Honda has, you know, a fleet of cars in India, I mean, a big range of cars in India, and they do something called the Drive to Discover. With our scouts, we curated an entire itinerary for Honda to explore Northeast. And that was completely done by us, fulfilled by us and our partners. And that gave us a big entry into the corporate segment, wherein it's not just looking at the employees and how you engage them, but also look at companies which want to take all their employees outside somewhere. And that has essentially helped us really put a huge increment into our revenues as well. Because a lot of people travel together and, you know, you're working with more number of people, more customers. You're also able to sell your services indirectly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a win-win for, you know, the corporate, which gets a very unique curated experience, because end of the day, it is still curated and powered by scouts.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, certain company outbounds, we get scouts to travel with the group. So there, the scouts also, you know, get to travel free of cost,
mm-hmm.
which is good for them, which they usually might not have been able to.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something in it for them as well. And at the same time, you know, we are also able to talk to the employees, talk to the team, and, you know, kind of talk about what we do for their personal trips.
Mm-hmm. Last few questions then. What can we expect in 2020 then?
I think 2020 is when we will really expand our footprint from India. So right now we're looking at India, Nepal and Bhutan.
Mm-hmm.
Southeast Asia is something that is very high on our radar. I think that's the one thing that we want to really get right, which is start servicing countries outside of the subcontinent. And Southeast Asia is the one place we want to start off with.
Question then, for people who want more information on what you do and how they can listen to your podcast, what must they do?
Yeah, so it's pretty simple. We are @ScoutMyTrip everywhere on social media. So that's one way to kind of find us. We are there on scoutmytrip.com. ScoutMyTrip is there on the Android Play Store. We will be there on the Apple Store also by next week. So you'll find us there as well. And finally, to listen to my podcast, in fact, my podcast is hosted by two other team members.
Mm-hmm.
Both three of us host that podcast, depending on what episode it is. Search for Mark and Embark anywhere you listen to podcasts. So it could be Google Apple, Spotify, we're there everywhere. Mm-hmm. So it's Mark and Embark. That's the name of the podcast.
Actually, last few questions then. Are you getting more inquiries because of, you know, climate change? You know, obviously people are trying to fly or being told to fly less.
We haven't seen a direct impact of climate change in our business, but there has been a direct impact because of awareness in sustainable travel. So that is one thing that, you know, I'd want to touch upon. So sustainable travel has three essential components. There is a social element in terms of, you know, how you can kind of spread the word through social media and, you know, promote a particular place which others might not know. The second is with respect to the environment, how you can kind of travel responsibly by, you know, not littering, being nice to Mother Nature. And the third is about the economic aspect of it. When you travel, how can you support a local economy? How can you ensure that wherever you go, money stays in the local economy and helps improve lives of people who live there? So that one part of sustainable travel has really, really kind of pushed us, because what we do goes very in line with sustainable travel when it comes to helping local economies. These virtual guides are all based out of, are essentially local travel experts. They're based in different parts of the country. They look at specific regions. They specialize in, you know, specific types of travel, be it rustic or getaways or treks or road trips. And every time a virtual guide is hired, the money goes to the local guide. So it helps them. It helps them improve their lives. So that is the one part about sustainable travel which has really supported us. And the awareness about sustainable travel.
And also you mentioned the team as well. Obviously the team's got bigger. So that means that you, are you sort of, reducing your roles and responsibilities now? How have you found that over the last three or four years?
Oh, definitely. The team has grown from the last time we spoke, but the roles and responsibilities have not reduced at all. So I think the way the team grows, I think work never reduces, it only increases, because you're either spending more time on management or you're spending more time doing new things, and the competition keeps changing and evolving. So while the competition is there, they're also trying to do different things. So you have to be a step ahead of them and try doing something else. So I don't think work ever stops, no matter how big your team is. You're just trying to do different things. You're trying to spend more time on strategizing. In fact, one thing that's been very good for me and Deepak, and we really like about Scout My Trip, is we're still very hands-on. So because, you know, we are in such a competitive space, it does not allow us to ever step away from the work. So even now I'll write a blog post, even now I'll kind of record a podcast, or I'll still look into our Google ads, you know, and tweak it myself, do something different. So it's very hands-on still, but I think once our fundraise is through and we're able to kind of increase our team size, at that point of time we look at, you know, really ensuring our team grows and we are able to kind of really guide them and advise them. And that is the one thing that will probably go for us well, because we have been so hands-on, and we'll be able to guide and mentor the team very well.
All the best with that. In terms of your next trip then, what's your next trip for you then?
I think my next trip, I really haven't thought about it, to be honest, Neil, but you know, my wife has been saying that this year she would love to go to the mountains.
Okay.
So somewhere in the mountains is definitely on the cards for us, and we'd prefer to do this by driving and not on Leticia. So let's see where we go, which mountains we end up going to, but a trip to the mountains is definitely on the cards.
Cool.
Not sure when.
That sounds exciting. Please send me a postcard when you get there.
Oh, definitely. There is the world's highest post office in the northern Himalayas.
Okay. I've been to...
I'll send you one from there.
I've been to Shimla and Manali. That's pretty high
Shimla
up.
Shimla and Manali, they are at an altitude of around 2,000 odd meters. Uh-huh. So the highest post office, you know, in the world is at an altitude of around... Let me try and recollect. So this is around 15,500 feet.
Wow.
And this is in the state of Himachal Pradesh. Mm-hmm. And it is a small village called Hikim, H-I-K-K-I-M. And that is the highest post office in the world. So 15,500 feet is pretty high.
How would you get there then? Is it just car only then?
Oh, you can. Or bike? The car is the only way to go.
Okay.
Then. Yeah.
How long will that take then, that journey?
That journey from Mumbai will take a while, but Hikim is in Himachal Pradesh, in the area which has Spiti.
Okay.
The place I mentioned, number two place out of 15 and places to go before 2020. Mm-hmm. So Hikkim is in Spiti. Place for you. And you can, of course, not just car, you can also go by bike. A lot of bikers go here and, you know, they'll send a postcard to themselves. So by the time they come back home and there's a postcard waiting for them.
Okay, from the highest post office in the world. Vineet, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you so much, Neil. Lovely speaking to you. I love the energy that you kind of bring onto the show. It makes you talk more. Sometimes I think we end up rambling also.
Yeah.
So my apologies if I ramble too much.
Welcome to the podcasting family as well. I didn't know you did a podcast.
Yeah. So do listen to the Mark and Embark podcast. We'll Let me know how you like it. I think the first few episodes were very raw. There's just too much of audio editing I ended up doing. But then I realized that the lesser you edit, and you know, sometimes it's better.
Go with the flow.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Vineet, thank you very much. Wish you all
thank
the best.
Thank you so much, Neil.
Cheers, buddy.
Thank you so much.
All the best.
Same
now.
To you, and a happy new year.
Yeah, happy new year, mate. Have a good one. Cheers, mate. Thanks enough. Yeah. Bye.
Cheers.
Thanks to Vineet for coming on the show today. And if you liked it, please leave a rating and review of the show. Thanks for supporting the podcast, and I shall be back next week. If you're building something exciting, please get in touch and let's connect on Twitter at IndianStartupSH. And if you're on Facebook, go to facebook.com/IndianStartupShow. Love to get. Thank you and goodbye.